Looks like it's already Buddha's birthday. Pretty flowers. Every day is Buddha's birthday. I wanted to tell you all, we had the discussion last week about whether these magazines were getting, our ad was getting to anyone. I got a letter from a man who had read it, read that ad and wanted to know more about Buddhism. Wrote a very beautiful letter, very grateful letter, for he's brand new in the Dharma and is very interested in it. He's unfortunately locked up for, he's been locked up for 10 years, and he doesn't sound like he's getting out anytime soon. But he wanted more magazines and books and any kind of advice, and he's got a big sitting practice going. So people do read it, obviously. It's not bringing anybody to Floating Zendo except from afar. He said, how far is Floating Zendo from where I am? He's down by Anza Borrego, outside of San Diego. Just about as far as he could be. He sounds like a very nice man, though. Has beautiful handwriting. Very fine, very even, very beautiful. He said he's 32 years old. He's been in for 10 years. So it's one of those very sad stories he has. He says he has a lot to forgive himself for. But he's really keen about this. What are the different kinds of Buddhism? What is the different kinds of Zen? So I sent him Zen Mind and Beginner's Mind with all my notes in it. I've got it all scribbled up. I thought he might be interested in that. And then the posture of meditation, because I think that's the very best for just staying in the body and appreciating Zazen for the physical expression that it is. So, thank you, Donalyn. Rance thanks you. His name is Rance, R-A-N-C-E. He's African-American.
Why did he choose to write from the... There are several...
Oh, there are dozens and dozens of them. I don't know why he chose that one.
Do you know your address in there? Where did he write to?
It's the P.O. box, and then I got it from you, I guess, the first one. And then he sent me the... Well, that's true. Yes, and he has infinite time, so he can write to everybody in there.
I hear in San Quentin there's like a group of inmates that sit all...
Yes.
They do it under great adversity.
Yes, yes. Alan Sanaki sits in San Quentin, and there's a Tibetan Lama who has ordained several people on death row. And some of the Arcata people go up to Pelican Bay, which is where the really bad people go. There are two really terrible prisons for the worst prisoners. One is in Colorado, and the other one is far northern California, where the really, really bad guys go. And little tiny Rose goes up and teaches them yoga. And Rob, some of you know Rob, Rob goes up and sits with those big bruisers with all the big tattoos on them, and, you know, they're bad. He says they're very nice people. From his standpoint, there's no problem at all. And they're very grateful for the practice. It's a window into a whole nother world that they never even suspected when they were running around doing what got them in there.
Craig Fan and several people from San Francisco to the center from the San Francisco. One of the girls said I was in the chaplaincy class, she had a stroke, and so she's in a wheelchair, you know, unable to walk. And really good around very well. She felt like she felt like it was coming home when in prison because she understood. She just she just understood
being confined.
Confined in the street.
Yes.
And so she goes up there and she can get an outreach thing. Greg was sharing with us the first two kind of things.
Yes. Yeah. The bad people. Relatively speaking.
I mean,
no, of course not. Of course not. And in one way, but they've done very bad things. Well, you know better than anybody. Yes. One assumes they did bad things, but actually they've let a lot of those people out on DNA now, haven't they? Yeah. You're right. Yeah. Well, apparently Rance really did. I mean, he's not pretending.
Where does it come from, the badness? I mean,
I don't know.
It's unfair, you know. I mean, I don't know about the reincarnation thing. And I remember Houston Smith saying in one of the talks, he just said that one sentence so slowly that everybody got it, that we are all initially really, not initially, but good people.
Yes. Yes, we are still good people, whatever we've done. But causes and conditions, going back into infinite time, really, have brought us to where we are. And if we end up in prison, there are many, many things that created our own body in our own time. Just physically, when you think about two people coming together and making a baby, and those two people had come together by somebody, and so it goes all the way back. And if they can't cope in some way, there are a lot of social conditions that make it very difficult for people. And there are also psychological conditions. There's often a bully in the playground in school, in grade school. And often that child, girl or boy, isn't deprived in any way, but just enjoys for some reason.
So that's part of life, right?
It's part of life.
And why do we call it that? It almost seems like, to me, it looks like a puzzle. And you need that bully. Not need, but it's there.
Yes.
They all kind of fit together, right?
Yes.
So why are we always running away from the bad and, you know?
Because it's in us too. Mm-hmm. And we don't want to be reminded of that. That's my theory. I don't know. But it seems like if we actually acknowledge it, we have to accept that it's in us,
right.
And also begin to deal with it in some kind of intelligent way, not just throw them in the slammer and forget about them, which is what we do now. So it's an easy way of excusing ourselves from anything that's unpleasant, which is what we love to do. We much prefer the pleasant to the unpleasant, the good people to the bad people. And it takes an extra step to actually even consider knowing somebody in prison, knowing somebody who's done a bad thing. You know, we don't really like to do that. So it's in us, I think. But I think we also, because of who we really are, also recognize in any being, even the lowliest one, that that's Buddha too. And the more we practice, the more we're able to experience that, to really know it in our heart. And only then will something be able to be done for people. Something wise. It's a big problem because we're so many now. We just can't really cope.
It seems like a person who has done an extremely bad thing, murder. I mean, sitting must, I mean, they can have to face a lot of things
yes.
in that sitting.
Yes. That's what this guy said. He said, it's very difficult because I have so many regrets and I have so much to forgive myself for. And he said, now I've found this whole other part of myself that, he said, it's saving me. So I think it's a balance, you know. I often think Zazen saved my life. That it was so bewildering and so painful. I was about his age when I started to sit. I told him that. And, boy, I don't know what would have become of me if I hadn't started that practice. Forty years later, it still feels that way. That it saved my life. And keeps saving my life. Or keeps it. Holds it safe or something.
Well, this is interesting that someone in a really difficult situation is finding a lot of strength in Zazen, but it seems that when people are going through traumatic experiences, that is probably not the best time to start a practice. Would you agree on with that from what I've read?
I don't agree with that. I think if people are basically sane, psychosis is different. I think if people are really psychotic, it's not a good idea to sit. But sitting in any other kind of situation, I think is helpful. If you have a place to go to be safe, you know, a closet in your house or something, many people do that, or go and sit with a group when things are difficult, it's the best because you have to face it rather than turning away. And facing it is almost invariably the only way to get through it. Otherwise, it just follows you around forever. Where did you hear that, Wendy? You don't remember?
I read it a long time ago. You know, that was not probably the best time to start a practice.
I don't know.
It seems like that's situation. When we need it though, the most. It's when we're the lowest.
That's true. If you have
and we rise to the best of our ability. But I think, like Angie said, you know, if you got psychosis where you're out of control, you need medical help. I think, what was it we were reading with Coben or Dogen? I don't know. Said that don't sit when you're drunk.
Coben said that.
Okay. So to me, because God knows what's going to happen, or high, or something.
Yes, yes.
It's
not a safe situation, so maybe I could see that.
No, they weren't
talking
about that.
That's some kind of trauma they were talking about.
Yeah, like if you're going through a divorce.
Yes, or your father is dying or something like that.
I think psychologists come, you know, much more around in the last 20 years or so, around just how important and how this practice can work. It's not theory. I mean, it's a real practical experience.
I'm just struck by what you're saying, and I say it too, starting a practice. And I think what I've learned from Angie and just from practicing is that you don't start or end, it's just you were already practicing, you know. Mm-hmm. So it's not one day you're like, okay, there's trauma, so I'm going to start this thing. It's mindfulness, it's maybe paying more attention to a practice that was already there, and putting some mm-hmm. forms to it.
Yes, we've been practicing from the beginning, of course. Yeah.
And but I do know the experiences of people that have come to the cushion, and they do, I mean, literally start opening up and feeling and hearing and remembering things.
Oh, yeah.
It could be very disruptive. And that's certainly therapy material. And maybe not to continue to sit. I'm sure you've had experience like that.
Oh, I meet many people, not many, but a number of people who have...
And not to, until they...
Until they work through that.
Yes. Post the tedious, post-traumatic stress syndrome is the thing that I know of that's been reported to me that comes up. I mean, the darndest things come up. I mean, the other day, it was like, names and people of the past that I was part of 30 years were just drift by this river of thought. Why did that come up,
The mind is amazing.
So you would not hesitate to offer anyone the practice who is distraught, emotionally distraught?
No, not unless they have some terrible trauma in the background, some horrible abuse or something. But if they're going through some difficulty right now, certainly that it might be very helpful. Just to sit and quietly breathe and just be yourself, rather than having to be somebody for everybody else. It's a gift.
Well, maybe with some kind of direction, with
yes.
some kind of experience, so when things come up, that somebody can guide.
Exactly.
Or, sit with them.
Yes. Yes.
And it's self-governing, though. We can get up, we can stand up, we can leave. It's not something like, that's, you can't turn off or stop, really. The other thing, right, is two things came up also. Well, the other thing is when we're sitting upright like this in a strong posture, it's hard to it's not easy to have vulnerable and fearful thoughts. I mean, most of my fearful and anxiety comes up when I'm laying in bed, all cuddled up in the fetal position. But when I'm on my stool, I can think the same thought, and it's like, or so what was the big deal? What was I worried about? There's something about being in a strong posture. That's something I think's been handed down another 3,000 years to us. It just blows my mind how, this practice is just, how sturdy it is, I guess.
Yeah. So, Wendy, what kind of disaster do you mean? Are you talking about something specific?
know, I am a listener, so a lot of people come to me with their problems. And you know, I just ponder if this practice would be beneficial to them, even if they're in a distraught state.
You could offer to sit with them. No, not just send them home to sit in the closet, but offer to sit with them and give them a little instruction. And it wouldn't have to be fancy sitting, just to be upright and explain to them why. And that they can be strong and proud as they're sitting. And just be with their breathing and their body. Give themselves a little vacation. Once people taste it, they're very surprised because they don't know it's there.
And I've also, you know, considered what a prison outreach practice might offer to people that are in confinement.
Yes. Yes, it's very valuable.
Like a guided meditation in Zen for people that are going through like a panic attack that really have a hard time sitting? It just comes and goes, or is there like a breathing? I mean, I know different practices have that. I kind of make up my own stuff if I need to. Is there something that you have used or helped other people that you can pass on?
Not that I know of in Zen. I mean, we have the canon chant is what's pulled out for just about every upset that there is. Just calling on Avalokiteshvara. And that's another version. I mean, another version of that is the Heart Sutra, of course. And the Daihi Shindarani is a chant that we don't even pay attention to what it means, but it's to kind of clear things up and to bring peace again. And it has that effect if you chant it. If it just pours through your body without your thinking, then you begin to drop all the terrible thoughts that are racing, because usually those are about being too speeded up. You know, it's just too hard to put the brakes on. But if you pour yourself into and express, especially the Daihi Shindarani, it's a really good one, and the Kuan Yin one also. We don't have much guided meditation in Zen. Every now and then I do it, but that's mostly a vipassana practice. We maybe should do it more.
It would be nice just doing it with you, since you don't, or not much of it. Just to kind of, you know, see what it's like. Oh, what does that mean, Donna?
Sitting in silence for so long, it's my clients love guided meditations, but it's shocking. I remember at Arcata, I guess, up at the Arcata Zen Center, Rose and the Sangha missed it, because Rose, I guess, after, you know, 10 minutes or something, she would say something to the group, or if I remember this correctly, Angie did it one day. I jumped out of my seat and started, like, you know, saying, oh, you know, breathing in, it's a lovely, you know, something like, remember?
Yes.
And you said how awkward, how it felt for you.
Yes.
But Zendo bringing your voice up, you know.
But it was a time of great anxiety in the Sangha. People were really, really upset in many different ways, and it just seemed like, you know, they weren't going to settle down in their sitting unless I said something. And I think I know it was helpful. At least they said so.
They all said so. Yeah. Right,
yeah.
I was just so shocked.
So we can create whatever we need.
Actually, now that you're talking, it's nice. I mean, I've sunk into it and I love it.
I do.
Because, you know, we talk so much.
And that's what they said in prison. What Greg was sharing with us when he was sharing it. That it's this, that it's one of the few times it's like really quiet. There's just so much noise going on that we can just trust each other to be just quiet.
There was that email about kind of stepping up our chanting. Remember, I think you suggested that.
Oh, chanting.
Yeah, the Kamara Sutra.
The kind of the chant leader, is that what she was saying?
Yeah, I forgot what the office or
Kokyo.
The Kokyo. It seems like we're very. Chanting is a way of like. Rising and letting energy kind of flow, and it just seems like a lot of concern, about how to send that energy out. And I think chanting is a very good way. Like, I've heard on like other groups chant like the Heart Sutra. Actually, found an MP3 of people chanting the exact same translation.
Amazing! Yeah.
So that's a very good way.
One thing I do is go through the precepts, starting with all my ancient wrong actions. It just brings me back to reality, back to out of my own ambition, pretension, whatever it is that keeps us up and, you know, trying to be somebody. And it just brings me back all my ancient wrong actions from beginningless, based on greed, anger, and ignorance, based on mind, speech, and body, I now altogether fully avow. And then take refuge in Buddha and Dharma and Sangha. It's so simple. And then go through the vows. Embracing and sustaining right conduct. Embracing and sustaining every good. Embracing and sustaining all beings. And by the time I get there, I feel much better.
No, we're thinking, you're not chanting, because once you told us when we're doing the Heart Sutra, it's more about being like an ensemble and don't worry about what it means.
Mm-hmm.
But this, you're actually thinking about each one you're saying.
Yes.
This is the first time I've said this.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm. And when I see a full moon, I always do it. If I'm driving along in the car, oh, there's a full moon. Mm-hmm. And then I just go into it. The precepts are like something that holds us. And keeps us honest. You know, then we say, no killing life, no stealing, no lying. Well, you begin to see clearly just how things are with oneself. And it includes the intention to do as very best we can and know that it's not perfect and it won't be.
Mm-hmm.
I was reading that thing you put together for New Year, I think, or for Christmas, the quotes of Dogen. And he was saying, what a joyful, fabulous thing it is to sit zazen. I thought, yes! Yes, it is! It's fantastic. Awesome. How lucky we are.